All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you, and welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. My name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we sincerely appreciate your participation and your input along the way. I just want to note that our meeting next week is moved to Friday, April 16th, because the HITAC meeting meets next Thursday, so we had to move it just for next week. So make sure you check your calendars for that. I'm going to be starting with roll call. So when I call your name, please indicate your presence. And I want to note that Arian Malik, one of our co-chairs, is out today, but he should be returning next week. David McCauley is here with us today. David?
Present.
Ricky Bloomfield.
I'm here.
Cynthia Fisher.
Present.
Valerie Gray. Jim Gerges.
Present.
Edward June.
Present.
Ken Kawamoto. Victor Lee.
Present.
Leslie Leonard.
Good afternoon.
Clem McDonald.
I'm here.
Jack Poe. Raj Watlani. Ram Sharam. He indicated he might be out today, but Ram, are you with us?
I'm kind of listening in a listen mode. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Just in a listen mode. Okay. Thank you.
Sasha Termont. And Andy Truscott indicated that he is not available to join us today, but he should be back next week as well. All right. Thank you, everyone, and welcome again. And I'd like to turn it over to David for his opening remarks. David?
Thanks, Mike. Welcome, everybody. As you know, Arian is out today, so I'm going to run this solo. And as you might expect, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong, and our guest speaker has not yet logged into the session, so we've got to do a little bit of a tap dance
David, I'm here.
Oh, Bob. Oh, good. Great. You're here. You're not on the list, or I didn't see you on the list, so I was assuming you weren't here. Well, excellent. Okay, so let me give the group our agenda for today, and then we'll hand it over to you in a second. So we're going to first hear from Bob Dieterle, the Executive Technical Director for the HL7 Project Gravity, which is a part of our investigation into how standards priorities can affect health equity issues. Bob is going to cover a ton of material for us today. When Bob's done, we'll have some discussion. And then at the close of the meeting, I have a few corrections to our priority spreadsheet voting. We found a few errors in the Excel formulas. The good news is it didn't change any of our rankings or change any of our decisions. And then, as usual, after our discussion, we'll close with public comment. The main focus of today's meeting is to hear from Bob and to think of through how we might make priority recommendations back to ONC to address some of the issues of health equity, which was our number one priority in our voting. So, Bob, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you introduce yourself and give all the details about Project Gravity. Thanks.
More than happy to do so. I'm Bob Dieterle. Many of you know me. I've been around the standards work for a while. Background broadly is Cerner Corporation. At one point, I was general manager there. In the last 10 years, I've focused almost entirely on standards, working with CMS, with ONC, with the FHA, with HL7, WEDI, and X12. I'm one of the founders of the Da Vinci Project, and I'm one of the founders of the FAST Task Force under ONC. And I also have the privilege of being the technical director of the Gravity Project. So we're focused almost entirely on social determinants of health and health equity. So let me go ahead and walk you through the Gravity Project for those of you that may not be familiar with it. Next slide, please. Broadly, social determinants of health are important because they contribute a significant portion of what becomes health-related outcomes, whether it's food and food insecurity, the ability to get food, and its impact on diabetes or hypertension or heart failure, or its housing instability and the ability to go and adhere to treatment protocols, or it is transportation barriers that prevent someone from getting to a an appointment or being able to go to the store or being able to go to work, all the things that go and affect your ability to go and have healthy behaviors and healthy outcomes. So basically, roughly 40 to 50% of the entire health picture is focused on socioeconomic or health behavior, health-related issues, socioeconomic issues. Next slide, please. The Gravity Project is a spinoff from some work that was done by SIREN, Social Intervention Research Evaluation Network, UCSF. It started in May of 2019, focused on developing standards to exchange, to document and exchange social determinants of health data. So that, the next slide, please. In August of 2019, the Gravity Project became an HL7 Fire Accelerator Program to take advantage of the support that HL7 gives in working with and creating, in particular, fire implementation guides to solve unique exchange problems. We're a fire accelerator along with many of the others, the Argonaut Project, the Karen Alliance, Codex, Da Vinci, and Gravity, and I believe we also have Vulcan now. Next slide, please. The Gravity Project has a very broad collaboration environment. The public collaborative has over 1,800 participants that have been involved with various aspects of the Gravity Project from every domain, from every stakeholder group. Clinical provider groups, community-based organizations, standard development organizations, federal and state government are regular participants. Payers are becoming much more involved, and technology vendors. We have on this slide a couple of the public calls that we hold. One general call every Thursday afternoon with the full collaborative, and then we have a call on Wednesday afternoon working on the fire implementation guide. Next slide, please. Gravity Project requires support to be able to do what we do, and we have been very lucky in having some significant organizations be willing to become sponsors of the Gravity Project and provide the funding necessary, both in-kind grant and direct funding, to accomplish the goals of the Gravity Project. Next slide, please. The program management team for the Gravity Project consists of Evelyn Giego from EMI Advisors, Carrie Lewisberg, who is the project manager, also from EMI Advisors, Mark Savage, who's the policy lead from UCSF SIREN, Sarah DeSilvi, who is the clinical informatics director and is focused on the terminology work in the Gravity Project, from the University of Vermont, and myself as the technical director, and I'm the CEO of EnableCare. Next slide, please. There are two broad work streams within the Gravity Project, one focused on creating terminologies, filling gaps that exist, but having terminologies that are consensus-based, evidence-based, that define any of the aspects of social determinants of health, from assessment and surveys to defining health concerns and problems, establishing goals, establishing interventions or referrals, and tracking those to completion. The technical side is focused on creating the fire implementation guide to support the exchange of those semantics that we just talked about on the terminology side. Next slide, please. On the terminology work stream, next slide. We have 18 different domains that we're focused on. We have completed food insecurity. We've completed most of the housing-related items. We have completed most of transportation. And by completed, I mean taking it all the way through into the point where these value sets are created and either submitted to or published by the terminology authorities. We have a number of other ones we're working on right now, and we'll give a kind of a graphic of where we are in the process in a minute. Next slide, please. The terminology team has a very formal process they use, much like we do on the technology side, where they have subject matter experts that work with informatics experts and the community to establish appropriate terminologies and value sets for each of the specific SDOH domains. Next slide, please. This is the slide of where we are in the process for each of the domains that we have worked on. So as you can see, food insecurity, housing instability and homelessness, inadequate housing are well along the process of being submitted to the particular terminology authorities for publication. Transportation is almost at that stage, and then we have others that we're currently working on right now, such as financial strain, demographics, material hardship, stress, interpartner violence, and social isolation. Next slide, please. This is where you can find the published Gravity data sets. They're available on Confluence under the Gravity portion of the HL7 Confluence environment. Next slide, please. One item of note is the Gravity project submitted a number of new codes to for ICD-10-CM. That submission was done in December and was defended on March 10th, presented formally. We believe that these have been accepted for publication. The question is, will they be published in the September release this year or the following year? And that is something we're in the process of trying to, shall we say, influence to make sure that they get published as soon as possible. Next slide, please. This is the timeline for all of the projects that are underway right now. You see the various ones. You've got interpartner violence that's going on, social isolation, stress, material hardship. We're working on new use case development with the intent of, after a bit of a break for our community group, not for the people that are working on the Gravity project itself, but food desert and neighborhood safety are ones that we plan on picking up in the fall and after the break. We'll talk about the timeline on the technology side in just a second. Next slide, please. So broadly, this works by defining terminologies and value sets for each of the various SDOH domains, using those to define the specific set of clinical activities, assessment, problems, identification, goal setting, and the ability to define appropriate referrals and interventions. And then ultimately tying it back into the fire implementation guide. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So we created a fire implementation guide that went to ballot in the January ballot cycle for HL7. It had started out roughly a year ago as an implementation guide focused solely on food insecurity. We expanded that to be a framework guide to support any of the domains that we have talked about. So it went to ballot as a framework implementation guide supporting multiple domains. It supports the processes of assessment or survey, establishing health concerns or problems, goal setting, referrals and interventions. It supports consent and then aggregation for reporting. And there's a link here to the implementation guide that was balloted. Next slide, please. So as we said, this is linking back to clinical activities with various terminologies. We focus the assessments and surveys on link coding them, both the question and answers. The health concerns and problems are coded as SOMED CT and ICD-10. Goal setting is both LINC and SOMED CT. Establishing interventions or referrals is based on SOMED CT, CPT, and HCPCS. And then recording the interventions that were completed, again, SOMED CT, CPT, and HCPCS. And then we're working with NCQA and NQF to establish appropriate quality metrics. We'll probably be using the DaVinci DEQM guide for that. We're just showing it here as one of the additional activities. On the right, you'll see consent. We'll talk about how we're working with consent in a second, and on the left, aggregation for reporting. Next slide, please. We've defined a process using both Regenstrief's LOINC survey definitions and some NLM tooling, National Library of Medicine open source tooling, to be able to take a defined LOINC survey, convert it into an SDC questionnaire, administer the questionnaire, and create a consistent set of FHIR resources, a questionnaire response, observations, which include the question and answer to each of the questions, and then ultimately outcome of that questionnaire as health concerns, which based on a conversation between a provider and the individual, the patient, can be promoted onto the problem list, goals established, and interventions defined. Next slide, please. This is where we started, and we'll modify this in a second as far as expectations and scope of this implementation guide. We started with the idea that this would be primarily a clinical exchange between provider organizations and community-based platforms, exchanging the things that we had defined, meaning referrals, goals, problems, or health concerns, and then recording the outcome of the interventions. So the initial implementation guide was focused on the blue lines, the exchanges related to the assessment between provider organizations and community-based referral platforms, as well as between provider organizations and community-based organizations that actually deliver the services, food pantries, for example. We had identified a set of interactions here with payers and other interested parties, but we had left them out of specific workflows at the time we had started the work on the implementation guide. Next slide, please. I'm going to touch on consent, then I'm going to go back to the overall workflow. What we have defined within the implementation guide is a way to both define and exchange a consent resource where the exchange of information goes out of a HIPAA-controlled environment to a community-based environment. That would be maintained within the EHR, for example, when the exchange is directly to a non-HIPAA-controlled entity, or HIPAA-covered entity, I should say, such as a food pantry that doesn't have a business associate relationship with the provider organization. What we have also done is defined a consent resource that can be exchanged between a provider organization, or shall we say a HIPAA-covered entity, and a business associate, such as a referral platform in the community, that establishes the patient's consent to share that information outside of the HIPAA environment with a non-HIPAA-covered entity, such as a food pantry, or someone that's going to work on getting housing or transportation. Next slide, please. And by the way, we presented this as part of the ONC annual meeting in the panel on data tagging and consent. Based on feedback from our executive committee and from the strategic advisory committee, and in general from the stakeholders worried about health equity, we have expanded the workflow flows supported by the implementation guide. It did not require changes to the underlying fire resources, the profiles, the extensions, the value sets, et cetera. But what we've done is we've defined an additional set of the supported exchanges that we're in the process of including in the implementation guide and including in the reference implementation that we're developing. So this would account for surveys that are delivered by payers, by community-based organizations, exchanging the outcome of those surveys or assessments, being able to exchange referrals between payers and community-based organizations, being able to exchange referrals between community-based platforms, for example. So all of the blue lines will be in the final implementation guide as a supported exchanges using the resources that we had already developed and balloted in January. Next slide, please. This is kind of a simplified diagram to show all of the players that we're supporting as part of the exchanges without showing each one of the, if you will, exchange arrows other than to show that they would be between a fire API between two organizations. We're assuming there are both patient and community-based organizations that will not have technology platforms. We're looking at developing reference implementations that include applications for smartphones so that they can participate in the fire-based exchanges. Next slide, please. This is where we stand on the implementation guide. It was balloted in January. It met the 60% approval threshold, so it could be published as an STU1 once we finished ballot reconciliation. We had 227 comments, 72 were negatives, 155 were affirmatives of various types. We started ballot reconciliation on February 7th. As of yesterday, 161 of those ballot comments had proposed dispositions, and we're working through the dispositions on the remaining 66. We're on track to have that work completed by the end of April. We plan on taking it and the updated reference implementation to the Connectathon in May, testing most of the interactions, and then using any learning coming out of the Connectathon to go and provide additional update to the implementation guide prior to publication. And our target is to have it published by the end of June. That would be in time for pilots that we're in the process of establishing that would be starting in basically July or the summer of this calendar year and extending well into next year. Next slide, please. So what's next? We're continuing to work with NLM and Regenstrief on the survey process. We're working with the community to establish clinical content required for the multiple SDOH domains. We showed you the domains we're working on at the beginning of the presentation. We're advancing the development of the reference implementation to include the additional exchanges that we'll be supporting as part of the guide. We're incorporating dispositions from the ballot comments into the implementation guide. And we are in the middle of doing preparation for the May Connectathon. We do have a track that is the SDOH Exchange track that will be running as part of the May Connectathon. And then for those of you who wish to join us, working on the implementation guide, please feel free. It's an open public call, and it's every Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 4 Eastern. It is available on the HL7 calendar. Next slide, please. And this is information for those of you that wish to join the Gravity Project, either as a sponsor, an in-kind contributor, or just to participate in the public collaborative. Next slide, please. And I believe that's the end of the presentation.
Thanks, Bob. that's impressive scope and an impressive amount of participation from community organizations. Having worked with the early Argonaut work when we had 10 groups, most of whom didn't show up, getting to something of the size that you're dealing with now is kind of hard to imagine. Let me start some questions and then invite our task force members to raise their hand and ask some other ones. But let me lead off with what may be just a completely naive original initial question, which is, grouped broadly into the health equity umbrella are questions and concerns about capturing race, ethnicity, gender, and related stuff. Technically, I suppose, different from social determinants of health. Does Gravity address any of the race, ethnicity, gender nomenclature and interchange, or is it strictly focused on the stuff you described?
Well, it's focused on that, but the way we're focused on it is by adopting the U.S. core profiles, and to the extent the U.S. core profiles basically represent the SOGI work, we would adopt that uniformly across both provider, payer, and community-based organizations.
Okay, so that makes sense. Just essentially take that as your starting point, and you don't need to refine those. They're built into the U.S. core process.
I don't think we'd want to do something different than the rest of the industry is doing.
No, I wouldn't. I think that would be a problem if you were. I just wondered if maybe you'd been asked to, as you know, to refine some of those things. But it sounds like it's outside your scope. Okay, I have lots of other questions, but let's start with the group. I see Ricky, you have your hand up.
Sure, thanks, David. First of all, I want to echo the comments that this is just fantastic work. The scope is large, and you've taken on a lot, and it seems like you've made great progress. So it's great to hear that. I have a question. So when you've been thinking about this, is the assumption that the workflows within the care team, the providers, the care management already exist to enter this information into their software, whether it's the EHR or any other software they're using, or is part of this work to help define those workflows and for the EHR vendors as part of the Connectathon to produce those workflows if they don't yet exist?
That's a really good question. We do have EHR participants in this. Some of the workflows exist, depending upon the particular EHR, the ability to go and conduct surveys, for example. The major EHR vendors already have adopted some of the standards, whether it's the Accountable Care Community Survey, or it's PREPARE, or it's some of the work that we're doing around hunger vital signs. They've adopted those survey processes to collect information inside of the EHR. What we're doing here is defining how to represent them and fire and exchange them. Goal setting depends upon problem definition and health concerns. Basically, everybody has a problem list of some form or another. Whether they're able to support the concept of a health concern that is not yet a problem is variable. Depends upon which EHR vendor you're talking about. Goal setting is pretty much universal. There's support for it, but it varies as far as the depth. And so we're probably going to define only a very high-level exchange of goals related to social determinants of health, not trying to go and preempt the work that's being done, for example, by the multiple chronic conditions work that's going on, defining goals in a broader care setting, community-based care setting. As far as interventions and referrals, that is really an interesting problem. There's work that's being done by a number of the EHRs. In fact, they're participating in some other work that I'm involved with around post-acute orders, which is an electronic exchange of referrals and interventions using service requests, tasks to coordinate it, and procedures to document it. So this is really an emerging environment. Most of that work is currently done, as you well know, by telephone and fax, not by any kind of electronic exchange. So we're defining fire-based standards for that exchange with the assumption that at least a certain group of organizations, will be able to support them. We do have one or more referral platforms that already have indicated they're in the process of implementing the ability to support task and service requests for referrals. So I think we're skating to where the puck's going, but the puck is getting there pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's really helpful. There's definitely an element of if you build it, they will come here, and it's a catch-22 because you need the infrastructure there to exchange it before entities will spend a lot of time in investing in the user-facing data entry part. One of the things that I think back to, I know David mentioned Argonaut, is thinking through the original Argonaut and the U.S. Core around data types like a care plan, for example, where clearly there's a need there, and it's a highly requested data type. But every EHR vendor implements that differently, and even if the EHR supports it and the health system supports it, getting clinicians and care teams to actually spend the time to enter that and to create that data in a structured way has been a significant challenge. So it's great that you're thinking about some of those things and how to, avoid the, data entry clerk problem and try to make it as seamless as possible.
Yeah, I think one comment, let me make this. One of the early drivers in health equity and exchange of information is probably going to be the payers that have an interest in this space, in particular because they don't have complex platforms already associated around, for example, like EHRs, where they have to change workflow. They have something that they can adopt pretty quickly. So we think that they're going to be one of the early adopters of it, perhaps in advance of some of the work that's being done by the EHR vendors.
Victor, I see you have your hand up. I think you were next in line.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And this kind of builds upon Ricky's comment, which I think, relates. Ricky, when you were talking, your question, I think, relates to the capability to enter this information into EHRs. And I wanted to build on that by addressing a potential gap in the authority to enter these codes. And I'm by no means an expert here, but this is kind of what I heard in a webinar, and I'm kind of referring to the slides from that webinar. But it sounds like, and this might be from CMS, is around, who has the authority to enter these social determinants codes. And there's the concept of a quote unquote clinician and the definition around that and who is able to kind of officially enter these codes. And I'm wondering if it's maybe within the purview of this task force to, to seek clarification around that and also to educate clinicians or other people who have the authority, to officially enter these codes and have them be a, kind of a permanent part of the record. And this, it may be outdated. The slide deck that I'm looking at is from 2019, so it's admittedly a couple of years old, and maybe there's been progress made on that. But so that was the comment, was really around, in addition to capability, the authority to do that. Because I think if people don't enter the data, then, your data set's only as good as what's there.
Yeah, let me make a comment. I'm not aware of any formal authority requirement. There is some question as to what information can be exchanged without patient consent outside of a HIPAA-controlled environment. There's also some concern related to specific types of social determinants of health documentation and the sensitivity of the individual to having that information exchanged. I think certain things that we can clearly understand, like interpartner violence, where they don't want that to be exchanged with most organizations. There are other things that may wind up being more of a concern to some individuals than others, such as lack of income or lack of housing, where they believe it might affect their ability to get a job. So there's sensitivity around this. It's not so much in the entering it as in the use of it, from what I understand.
Let me jump in. Clem, I see your hand. I'm going to come to you in a second, but just to follow directly on the consent question, because I think it fits with what Bob just said. Bob, does the IG make some assumptions around the process of capturing the consent? Is there some assumption that it's been captured before any of this data is, a survey is put up on the screen or engaged with? How does the consent workflow envision to flow?
It's a good question, David. The only consent that we're dealing with in this version of the implementation guide is the consent given by the patient to the provider to share information with a community-based organization. So share the information requesting a referral to a food pantry, requesting a referral to someone that could deal with housing, and the associated documentation to go with it, which in general is not really on the clinical side of documentation. It's more along the problem or the goal that may be associated with it. But the intent is to have that documented somewhere in the EHR, and all we're doing is providing the definition, the profile on the consent resource to exchange it, assuming it will more than likely be something that is an attachment, not as something that's computable. So we're trying to live with where the industry is today.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-on question, is are you going to stretch for computable consent, because you could theoretically mask off some of these data types that you've mentioned were maybe more sensitive than others. But I agree with you, the industry is not there today.
Well, there's work going on at HL7 and a number of work groups around fine-grained consent and data tagging. There's work going on at ONC trying to define what makes sense for standardized consent across the industry or across portions of the industry. We've decided at this point not to take on that task. We'll let that process mature as it's going to, and then we'll adopt it in the next round of the implementation guide. The only thing we wanted to do is make sure that we had a way to exchange patient consent with business associates, allowing the release of information, okay, that the provider and the patient have agreed to, or the payer and the patient have agreed to. We'll provide consent in both those spaces. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a reasonable, from my perspective, it's reasonable to start with something that covers most of your use cases rather than try to start with something that's really hard to achieve and fails to cover any use cases. So start small and scale up. Clem, exactly. I think you had your hand up next.
Yeah, a couple of questions related to the burden. So it's a very large spec. The surveys, I imagine, is the survey instrument the one that it was used widely, prepare maybe. Is that the core survey instrument? Because that's pretty straightforward and it wouldn't be hard to complete. But all the other stuff looks like a lot of work, and the things that would apply to clinicians could, keep them busy all day. So I just wondered if people thought about that. That's number one. Number two is what percent of people would require these data to be entered, are you estimating? Would it be everybody, even if they weren't subject to these risks?
It's a great question. I think that's going to be dependent on a couple of things. It'll be dependent on decisions made by provider organizations as to what surveys they want to do related to social determinants of health. It's going to be related to quality measures. It's going to be related to decisions that are made by payers on, what they want to have their members assessed for. It'll be based on decisions that are made by HHS, CMS, ONC, the SSA, et cetera. We're not making those decisions. What we're doing is trying to go and automate as much of the process as possible. And you and I talked about that in the fall. What we're doing is trying to take the tooling that you have developed, the open source tooling, that can take a LOINC-coded survey, convert it to a FHIR questionnaire, administer it to an individual, and then ultimately record those outputs as FHIR resources, observations, condition resource, questionnaire response, that could potentially be incorporated into an EHR, trying to take that entire survey evaluation process off the plate of the provider, rather use it as input for them to review and coordinate appropriate interventions by talking to the patient.
Yeah, also, well, that's a limited size questionnaire. It's all the other stuff, you know, like having to do care plans and all, which are not part of the average provider's day. I think they're getting between 8 and 15 minutes now per patient in some of these plans. So just, I hope the system, not you, will be sensitive to that. And I think that won't apply, you know, to the average, it shouldn't have to apply, I guess, to the average person who comes in the door, you know, who's got a good insurance policy, et cetera, and a good income. But anyway, just keep that in mind, or at least when it comes up, to try to keep the physicians from having to shut down, spend the whole day and filling in things instead of doing the patient.
Agreed. Just to be clear, we are not covering care planning in this implementation guide at all. We're only covering the ability to exchange goals if they have been set.
Okay. All right.
Care planning is something that was out of scope for what we're doing. Sorry.
Yeah. You're always sensible. Don't know why I even ask. Okay.
No, I mean, we try as much as we can to not burden the provider with things that they either can be automated or aren't ready for, I'll say, public consumption.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And to that end, Bob, I understand the technical focus of the Project Gravity, but I'm maybe pinging back a little bit to Ricky's first question. Is anybody maybe in conjunction with your group working on sort of model workflows for a physician office to incorporate the capture and use of this kind of information? I mean, you know, the AMA, I'm not sure, AAFP here in Kansas City, you know, somebody sort of saying in parallel to the development of these questionnaires, here's a model workflow of how to use that. Is that something anybody's talked about?
Yeah, interestingly enough, my primary partners in developing this implementation guide are two people from the AMA, Corey Smith and Monique Van Berkom, and one of their consultants. So they have been working with me on this from the beginning. So they're reasonably sensitive to the provider-related issues. AAFP was actually the very early on sponsor for helping the Gravity Project to become a fire accelerator and are a permanent member of the executive committee. So we do have at least provider facing associations or organizations that are participating on a regular basis.
Good. Well, I think that will be, you know, as with all these things that start out as a well-done technology piece, getting the adoption in the community will be, you know, as much of a challenge as the work of defining the technology, if more so. So taking that into your workflow early on is a smart
thing. Absolutely agree with you, David. I mean, we're concerned about that with everything we do is whether or not it's adoptable. In fact, that's the first thing we ask when we try to define something is whether or not this would inhibit adoption or accelerate it.
Yeah. I have a technical question, but does anyone else have their hand up? I don't see it on my list. Anybody that I missed? Okay, let me ask my technical question, and if it inspires you to ask more questions, please weigh in. And this is really nerdy, Bob, but you know that's my job. Your internet bubble diagram, where you had entities on the left hand side and the right hand side with the internet in the middle, sort of implies point to point fire communications. And I'm just wondering how you think that would work. I totally understand the nomenclature work and the fire questionnaire work and the consent capture and conveyance work, but are you envisioning that a food pantry will be firing off fire queries to all the EHRs in town to see if they have something about one of their customers. I don't know what they call food pantries call their patrons.
Really,
does that make sense?
Really good question. Good question. we're actually looking at two different workflows. One for those that are fire enabled, and one that are only fire capable, I guess I should say. In the case of those that have permanent relationships, we're assuming that the directory work we're doing will provide the endpoint resolution, and the trust framework work will wind up providing, and this is work that's being done in FAST, will provide the common, if you will, authorization authentication environment. So really it's a question at that point of connecting and exchanging. We're not eliminating the concept that there could be somebody in the middle, an HIE, a clearinghouse, a particular service provider that goes and basically assembles all of the pieces and provides for the exchanges. And in fact, the AMA is working with Onyx to go and create such a platform. What we're doing is in the implementation guide, designing everything as point to point, because we believe that will be part of the exchange ecosystem, if you will, with the assumption that there can always be somebody in the middle that's value added. What we don't want to do is design it for an intermediary to be there and have it not work point to point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so designing it so that an intermediary is not required sounds very smart to me. But let's just say you have the directory information accessed and permissions granted and everything is legit. Would you would query for specific observation codes? What would you query for to get the process started? I mean,
good,
if it's on a screen
question.
In front of a human, you see it, you know, in a little block of text and you can read it. But if you don't know what's out there, do you fire off a query for everything? Is there?
Okay, good question. The things we're focused on in this implementation guide are primarily related to referrals. The referral process, closed loop referrals in particular, but also to be able to share information that is associated with an individual that is labeled social determinants of health and permitted by the organization to be exchanged or the individual. So let's talk about the referral process. We've defined basically two referral processes. One that assumes you have a fire-enabled organization, such as a referral community-based referral platform. I'll just name a couple of names for the sake of creating concept. An Aunt Bertha, a Unitas, a NOFO, one of those platforms that's out there, a 211 that provides a lot of the referral infrastructure. So there's one path that says we know that we work with as a provider that referral platform. The first step in the process for referral is to push a task to that particular referral platform, post it, and have the referral platform come and get the associated service request, associated information, patient resource goal, et cetera, and then decide whether or not they can perform the request that's been made. If they can, then there is a defined exchange of status related to the task to show where it is. It's been accepted, it's in process, it's on hold, it is completed. Okay, so this is basically fire peers exchanging information, restful peers. There's another process where we assume you don't really have much capability at the other end. So what we're doing is assuming an out-of-band exchange, possibly using just email, that says, hi, click on the link here, and then you can authenticate to the service provider, or either the payer or the provider, EHR, and pull down the information related to what you're being requested to, but the updates are all made within the context of shall we say, the fire platform, the EHR, the referral organization, or the payer, that there's not going to be a lot of capability in a food pantry, for example. We're going to use the same approach to do something with the individual. What we'd like to do are closed-loop referrals with the person. So have an app on the smartphone that can say, hi. We send them an email, say, you've been referred to, and they can go online and pull down where the referral is. It's to this food pantry, and they can feed back and say, yeah, I went there and I was able to wind up getting food that's, ethnically appropriate. We haven't had any problems in communication. So our goal is to close loop referral with both the organizations and with the individual by the time we get done. It won't all happen right up front, but it's within the plan of the next year or so. That makes sense?
I think so. So you would have, you could imagine a care coordination entity taking responsibility for distributing these tasks and capturing data from the patient or consumer to,
correct,
you know, see what outcome was obtained and so forth. That makes good sense. I would just, not that you need my advice, but I would make sure that it's easy to get readable information from a screen before you have developed the ability to do point-to-point fire with all of the complicated authentication stuff that's not even fully baked yet, much the less well implemented. So there'll be valuable
point.
Information that you could just read it, a human can say, I see what I need to do.
So we're developing a reference implementation right now that actually shows a clinical workflow, a payer workflow, and a community-based organization workflow, actually a set of UIs that go and instantiate the workflow and then behind the scenes create the fire resources and do the exchange. So we have a way to go and demonstrate how this could work, and it's going to be open source and available to anyone to either take and extend or just use a reference on how to potentially create their own environment.
So we're closing in on the top of the hour. We can certainly keep going, and if there's more questions, you guys think of them in the next couple of minutes and get your hands raised. But I want to give you a softball, Bob, for maybe the last question, depending on anybody else thinks of one. If you could wave your magic wand and make something happen, what would that list look like? And you know how the government works. You kind of know, how lever arms work and all that. If you could influence, a recommendation back to ONC, what would you put in it?
First thing I would do is make sure that the submission we made for USCDI for a social determinants of health class and the associated elements within it were part of USCDI 2.0. My understanding from the task force is that's being carried forward, but ultimately it needs to wind up getting into USCDI. I would make sure that the implementation guide gets into the ISA so it can be cited. I would consider at some point, where it is appropriate, citing the requirement to use this implementation guide for payers and providers to be implemented over some period of time. I think requirements for the community-based organizations would be difficult at best, but at least we could require it around covered entities that typically wind up having regulation provided to them by ONC, CMS, HHS, et cetera.
Good. Good list. Doing our work for us. are there other questions from the group? You guys have been unusually quiet. Is that because Arian is not here to stir things up, or is it because Bob just did such an excellent job of covering stuff, or is everybody burnt out from their week? I'm looking back through my notes here while you guys think as well.
So, David, there's one other thing I would add to this. We need to, as a a society, define ways that we can have interventions associated with health equity and social need become part of the coverage that individuals have. So part of what we're doing is working with payers to say, okay, you know, if somebody needs food, we have a way to go and have the food pantry compensated for making that available. If they need transportation, we have a way to do the same thing. So as we start to deal with these social problems that affect, in particular, health, but probably are broader than just health, we have a way to go and bake that into the fabric we currently have for dealing with covering costs of care delivery.
And CMS obviously is a big player in that opportunity. I mean, to see something like that happen, and CMS could drive that.
And we're seeing payers that have an interest in it too. I mean, the national payers are all very interested in making this happen. The problem is we just don't have the vehicles for it today, and we don't have a way to verify that something has been ordered, delivered, and the patient has been served properly, which is why we're trying to do the closed loop referrals, because we think that'll become a big part of the ability for payers to say, yep, that got delivered, therefore I'm going to pay for it.
Okay, excellent. All right, I don't see any other questions. Bob, thank you for excellent work and for an excellent presentation about the good work. If we have questions that come up afterwards, I know how to get in touch with you if we need clarification or follow-up. But thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
So you're more than welcome. And
okay.
If you have interest, come join Gravity, and I'm always available to answer questions. So thank you, David, for the opportunity.
Great. Thank you. So let's see what our next slide is. We've got a few things to cover at Task Force agenda, and we may, if we're lucky, we may finish a little early. So as you guys remember, let's go to the next slide. We identified these top-level areas. We don't need to linger on this because you all have seen this slide many times. So let's go to the next one. Next slide, yeah, and we came up with sort of a simplified scoring mechanism for an initial rating of what we thought was important. Again, I think all of you who've been on our recent calls know this process that we went through. And we put that in a spreadsheet. Arian automated it with a few glitches. We figured out the glitches, and the next slide shows our corrected voting priorities. And surprisingly, perhaps, given that there were a couple of mistakes in the formulas, the numbers changed, but the actual rankings did not. So the ranking is the same as the original spreadsheet. It's just the numbers are a little closer together. So I think that's a sort of a testimony to the robustness of the data that we captured. It's not highly sensitive to math errors. And you can see, as we went over last week, and Arian pointed out that there's two, maybe three items that got the high priorities. There's a group of about four items in the middle, and then a group of four items that were clearly lower than the others. So none of that has changed. I tried to make a clarification last week that this ranking should be taken as our, you know, kind of preliminary cut at this, because at the time we voted on these things, we weren't up to speed on what all of the content meant, what the choices actually meant. So I think we'll almost certainly go through a reprioritization after we've learned more and had some discussion in the future, in our future meetings. Any questions about the corrected rankings? The fact that it didn't change dramatically makes me a little bit more comfortable. If it had radically swiveled things around, then we'd have a bit of a problem. But it didn't. Okay, next slide, for your entertainment and to verify that I'm not making it up. That's the old numbers from the previous meeting. We don't need to dwell on this one, but just there they are if you're curious. And then the next slide is, and one more. This is where we stand in recruiting expert testimony for the group. We've heard from Saner about situational awareness category, and obviously today we just heard from Project Gravity about health equity. Next week, we are shifted to Friday, don't forget, and we have two speakers invited at the moment, George Tripsack, who is leading the Odyssey work and can talk to us about their project to coordinate fire and OMOP. And on the PCORI side, I've asked Russ Waitman from University of Missouri, who is a longstanding implementer of PCORNet, to come and join the program with George to talk about PCORNet and the work that that they've been doing at University of Missouri over now, I think, quite a few years. And so Russ and George will walk us through two of the current large-scale efforts at extracting EHR data and putting it to these aggregated uses rather than for direct patient care. And in the future, we have Paula Braun from CDC scheduled in our April 29th meeting to talk broadly about CDC modernization. The other items on the list that are in blue, we're still working through those to see if we can find the right person and define an appropriately focused topic. So that's work to be done, but is underway. Are there questions from the group? We've got, we're a little ahead of schedule, but everybody's being pretty quiet today. Any questions about process, where we are? Mike, I'm not hearing any things that are pressing on people. Do we want to do the public comment early? Does that break the rule if we do it early, or is that okay?
Well, Les has his hand up if you want to call Les.
Okay. Yes, Les. Yes, Les. I see. I didn't see you there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. I just wanted to mention that I had reached out to the organization of PCORI to try to find the best expert for it, having, you know, been part of PCORNet for, you know, 7-8 years now. And I think Russ is a great expert to talk about what one PCORNet looks like. Ken Marcello is the data architect and in charge of the development of the data model at the Duke Coordinating Center. And he's more than willing to come also if you want to do that. I understand if there are time limitations. I wasn't aware that, I next time I guess I'll be more aggressive at making my efforts to help you choose the right person known.
Well, I appreciate that. I think Erin and I are both feeling kind of pressed because the meeting isn't flexible as to when it is, and finding people who have open schedules at the time of our meeting has not always been easy. So, we didn't wait for you. Let that be a lesson. Speak quickly. Do you think what would Ken? You say his focus is on the data modeling details.
Well, yeah, he runs the whole network. There's a whole quality improvement process that comes from, you know, taking the data, mapping it to the data, PCORNet model, assessing it, and, you know, advancing the PCORNet networks, the subnets, which Russ is the leader of one of those subnets to create this integrated system with 100 million patients in it for research for this. I think the other group you could be talking to is CD2H, and bring Chris Shute in to talk about that, or what's going on with that, or which is the network that NIH has put together for COVID response, and which has some of its newest technology in there. So those would be my recommendations to you in this area.
Okay, that's great. Would you send me just via private email the email address of Ken? My email for Chris is probably out of date. So if you have a up to date one for Chris Shute, okay. I will maybe contact them and just sort of see if it makes sense. I don't want to have too crowded discussion, but I certainly don't want to leave out important perspectives. Other questions or reactions? Okay, Mike, can we do that comment ahead of schedule?
Sure. Sure, and if anyone thinks of anything they want to ask, we can go back to that when we finish public comment. Operator, could we please open the line for public comment?
Yes, if you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you, David.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, and thank you, operator. Everybody likes to get a little bit of time back, and I think we'll give you a good 15-ish, 20 minutes of your time back, and barring any other questions, going once, twice. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for your questions, and we'll see you next week on Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you.